This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 667 with guest Dwayne Robinson, recorded on April 16th, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Spring is on its way. Dwayne, this is the best time of the year in Tennessee, right? I mean, spring is here. You got to be loving it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. Now, you might end up with what happened to me tonight on the tennis court, where you get a pop-up shower that and wind storms that blow trees over. But yeah, this morning was beautiful, and it's just the best time of year to be up here. And yeah, well, I would say this, Jim, it's the best time of the year on this side. When you go into fall, it's beautiful because of all the leaves changing colors up here and everything. So yeah, Nashville's a beautiful place to come and a lot of cool stuff to see. So maybe one day, Jim, you'll make that drive from Omaha just for me.
I need to do it more. And Jay Franzi, he's up in Cincinnati. He's just south of Cincinnati. And he's like, why don't you come out here, man? He drives by. We did a little whiskey talk in the pre-show, which we won't talk about here, but he's always like, dude, you could come out here. Like, we got plenty of stuff around us. So I do envy you guys. I'll get out there. We'll figure it out. Anyways, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes out at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. Appreciate you guys doing that as well. Each and every month that you're hanging on there, we've got a $5 plan if you just want to jump on and help the network. theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And then if you want to use the affiliate links out at theaverageguy.tv, you can do that as well. Head out there, upper right-hand corner, just click through it. You know how it works. You guys are good at this. Thanks in doing that in advance. You heard from him already. Dwayne Robinson's hanging out. Dwayne, welcome back. It's been 5 years. Sorry.
You don't love me. I was abandoned. I was abandoned by Jim Carlson, guys. Do you know how demoralizing it is to be abandoned by poor Jim?
Sorry. Yeah. We chatted a couple times. Last time, 5 years ago, you were talking about some kind of bot framework. We were talking about crypto mining back in the day. You were showing me a foldable phone as I was going through all the old, notes from the last time we were together. You were showing me a foldable phone. There it is. We did a whole rundown, but listen, life's gotten interesting for you from a work perspective. You're still Microsoft. You were talking about bots 5 years ago. We've had an AI revolution in the last 5 years, right? And you've been at the center of that storm, so to speak, right? I mean, give us a quick 10-minute catch up, like from think about 2001, but what brings you to Copilot? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, if we kind of go back, right? If you go all the way back, of course, now I've been at Microsoft as of, oh my God, Jim, today is my 21 year anniversary for Microsoft today on the 16th.
That's awesome, dude.
Hey, I've been at Microsoft 21 Woo-hoo. Years now. Cheers. And if you think about cheers. It, yeah, cheers. Absolutely. Cheers. And yeah, I've got a really big crystal over here for 20. And so the thing is that when I started there, I was like an exchange migration expert from like Lotus Notes. There was I was also Active Directory, doing NT4 to Active Directory migrations. And then on top of all of that type of stuff, you know, that kind of led me down. So you would go, wait a minute, how do you start there? And then you get all the way to kind of where you are. And eventually through the career of reinvention at Microsoft to be able to have a 21-year anniversary, because keep in mind, guys, that means that when I started at Microsoft, the new product that had come out that year was a little piece of software called Windows XP. That's how long it was. And my hair was not this color.
Mine wasn't either. In fact, it wasn't this color the last time we got together 5 years ago.
I know. I'm grayer too. So, So what ended up happening over the years is through reinvention, I ended up getting into, through the services organization, they ended up asking me to take on some projects. I ended up getting into, back in the IoT days, gotten to where I was doing, I was the worldwide lead architect for Microsoft for automotive. And so when I was doing that, we started wanting to put, you know, voice assistants into cars. And that got me going with Bot Framework, because Bot Framework was just coming out of research. And it was like this, this build from scratch developer toolkit. We were talking about the Bot Framework Composer. And that Bot Framework Composer back in the day is now an evolution of everything that you see that is AI, because what ends up happening, Bot Framework Composer, a group decided to build a SaaS-based platform or software as a service-based platform to, called Power Virtual Agents. And so they built it on top of us. Well, then, you know, they said, why don't we just merge these two things into one thing? So I ended up in Power Virtual Agents. We rebuild whole conversation stack for a SaaS platform that can be flexible but easy enough to use and all this kind of wonderful jazz. And that was all good. And then we even bought a company called Nuance, which was, if anybody ever remembers, you call on the phone and you're hitting stuff on the bank, or you're talking to your bank today, you're probably talking to Nuance as it sits today. And then that we went through and they realized, okay, we had this bake off. And we went, okay, here we go. We're going to actually invest in Copilot Studio, because as a SaaS platform, it had everything it needed, where the other, the Nuance stuff kind of needed to get merged into it for SaaS. And so we're doing this, and then this day happens, Jim. And that day happened. It was in November, and I'm pretty sure it was November of 2021. I'd have to go back and look for sure, because the world is a blur since this day. What it was is I had all my plans down on what I needed to do. I went on Thanksgiving break and I came back and was told, throw everything you're doing away because it doesn't matter anymore. We're going over here. And what was that? It was the launch of ChatGPT in the market. And as soon as that hit the market, everybody and all of everything I was doing in Power Virtual Agents, we were told, go full bore. How do you implement this into the product? And so, and not only that, and then 2 to maybe 3 months later, we already had incorporated it into Power Virtual Agents. And this is where you, like, what everybody calls now, they call it a RAG pattern, which means retrieval augmented generation, for those that don't know what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is, this is where you say, here's some data, and I want to be able to ask questions about this data. And I want it to be my own data. And so what we ended up doing is we ended up building that into the platform so that people could do that. And we built a few other AI-based features on top of OpenAI. It would have been like GPT-3, maybe 2. It might have been 2 at that point. And what ends up happening with that is all of a sudden we become the center of attention product. Now, keep in mind that we could hardly get 100 people to come talk to us at an event, to we were the center of the universe. And we only had 75 devs at the time, like, or 75 people in the whole product team. And then it just went crazy, because everybody was going, well, this is the way to go. This is the future. And so we end up, and then they were like, we're going to rebrand it. We're going to make it this other thing, which kind of goes to the little thing here that you got for me, which is that is when that became Copilot Studio. And then Copilot Studio has just been evolving and sort of the core part of the Microsoft AI story for our, think of it as commodity orchestration engine that, and for those, I'll make it simple. If you think about network routing, because I got a bunch of home gadget geeks here, right? You think about what was the innovation that happened, or what really made the internet a thing? Well, it wasn't networks, because we already had networks. What it was the concept of a router being able to connect multiple networks to talk to one another to be able to work. And when you think about that and how a router routes between different networks, Cobalt Studio at its core is a conversational router or a conversational orchestration engine. And so what it's doing is it's figuring out what are the right tools, what are the right things to be able to answer the question that you're asking. Because you, when I say I want to order a large pepperoni pizza, there's something called intents and entities. And what it was is the intent is I want to order something. The entities are large pepperoni and pizza. And so you have to be able to understand that, extract that out, and then being able to pass that down and do stuff with it. And so that's how it's always worked. Like if you go all the way to language understanding, all the way back to Bot Framework, it's always worked this way. It's just that we had to train everything from scratch. And so now that we're at this new level, I was telling Jim that there's a feature that we're releasing now that just is coming out in the preview. You guys can go play with it, where it helps. It basically is advanced tool management. And this thing is where it gets really super crazy and does all the crazy things that you're starting to see, but allow you to build your own. And that's where I fit. So when you talk about Copilot, because I know Jim, you and I kind of talk about stuff, I don't work. I mean, yes, I work in the team that we do have the M365 Copilot, which is what everybody calls Copilot. And then you have there's a public version, which is like, yeah. And then you have like the, you know, and I'm not saying it's like, yeah, and that it's that like functionality wise, it's the thing that people use that's like a ChatGPT or something like that. But where you're starting to see is I work on the enterprise side, right? Which is really interesting because it allows people to build really cool stuff. And so a lot of the things that you guys like to talk about is the personal type of tools.
Yeah.
Those personal tools don't really apply to where I sit in the org. That's more a commodity component that they're building, which is fine. And it's really good. It's more that I sit on the side where the M365 Copilot, you have autonomous agents, you have custom agents that you're building for yourself or for the different things. And that's where I sit. And we're talking again, to your point, from when that announcement happened to now, I was like one of the lead people and one of the few people that understood the whole product back then. Now this is where I ended up saying, everybody kept asking me questions. I got tired of saying the same thing 4,000 times. So what did I do? I went and made a video that explained something, and I put it up on YouTube, Jim, because I wanted partners, customers, everybody to be able to get it. It was the only real place I knew to put it. And I was recording videos of my son's football games with a drone, and I was putting stuff there. So I had the stuff to do it. I kind of understood how to do it. And now that thing went from somebody going, hey, can you make a video about this? And I was like, sure, I guess I could. To when people said, well, when's your next video? And now I have over 13,000 people following me on YouTube. And when I go to events, I have people come up who know me. I don't even know who they are. And it's not, it's because I've never met them, but they know me from the videos, which is really humbling in a lot of the ways. And even today, and it goes all the way to today, this morning, I launched a video that said, I'm going to have to evolve my channel because AI has evolved so far since I started the channel, which is only like about 2 years old, that I have to evolve with it because what I talk about on this channel may not be so relevant as we see things evolve and as concepts like vibe coding become more and more prevalent and such. And so that's kind of the breakdown of all went. It's kind of neat.
That's awesome. Crazy. You know, I think about early 2023 and we saw Bing Chat, right? The very first versions of it. Later in 2023, rebranded to Copilot. Through 2024 and 2025, all these different iterations, right? We see the same thing with OpenAI and Claude and the other services that are out there as well. Mm-hmm. But the promise of agentic or these agents has always been out there. but it hasn't really taken off until now. Like I was for a while, if you would ask me like 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, like, hey, is this agentic stuff going to really work? I would have said not a chance. Like I don't have any, because you mentioned this, the consumer model had always kind of been this, which by the way, the consumer model is still a miracle. The things you can do, you can put in, the things it creates for you, but it's a chat model, right? You give it something, it comes back to you. You give it something, it comes back to you. It doesn't, and it's still a miracle. What it does is amazing. I mean, I've done some amazing things. We've created music. I've do my album art. The whole podcast production now goes through AI, right? It's perfect for that. But Dwayne, on the cusp of agency, right? I don't know if that's the right word, but of building these agents, I've been super skeptical because they just, we've talked about it and we've been like, oh yeah, they'll go off and do stuff for you. And the example is always like, they'll go buy a plane ticket for you. And I'm like, actually, I want to buy the plane ticket if I'm going to buy it. But when you're thinking, as we skip ahead to today, right? We're all super familiar with the consumer model that exists today. And it's amazing. Claude, Cowork, ChatGPT's got a Cowork kind of thing coming. We've been messing with OpenClaw, which is a local version of that. When you think about Copilot, agency, like where does that come in? And what's the, give me some ideas beyond buying a pizza or booking a plane ticket that makes sense from an agent standpoint.
Yeah. Well, see, it's kind of multi-tier if you look at it. Okay. So first of all, if I'm talking about I'll talk about Microsoft Stack stuff right first and make sure that we're all kind of level set. So in my opinion, I really think that there are a couple of things that came out with the M365 Copilot that are revolutionary. One is going to be when they started to build what they called the frontier agents. So an example is the two that I really love is the researcher and the analyst. And those things, you can go in and it can go do research for you. It can do analytical reporting and all of this. And those things are kind of built in appliances, and you can call them and say, hey, I would like you to do this to help me. The other thing that just happened, and if you haven't played with this, and I'm going to give you a real world scenario of something I did yesterday with it, okay? And that is there is a new product or a new kind of like agent that's inside of the M365 agent sphere that you get that are packaged up inside of this. And so when you go and you say, I'm going to talk to the M365 Copilot, you're talking to something, but this is not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about is something called Copilot Cowork. And Copilot Cowork, which if anyone follows me on my YouTube channel or whatever, you can go and watch a video, a podcast that I did with a gentleman by the name of Baz Bruckelmans. And he's one of the lead architects. He literally moved off of Copilot Studio to go work on this shortly after that video, as a matter of fact. And he was working on this where we got to make it more, right? We got to make it more, and we need to be able to deal with like this co-work type of thing. And for those that don't know, this co-work thing is where you're building something that can do something much more complex than answer a question or create a Word document. And so to give you guys perspective, there's something that's underlying, which this is the thing that really, in my opinion, really differentiates Microsoft Space, which is something we call WorkIQ. And WorkIQ is everybody's data is inside of this cloud that we have for our productivity cloud. Most people use it. So what WorkIQ is the ability for you to be able to interface with these different things where we have different AIs that are looking at everything and helping be able to say, this is how Jim Coulson responds to things. And here's the route and the graph around Jim Coulson so that whenever we're chatting about with Jim Coulson about what he wants to do from a productivity standpoint, that Jim Coulson, number one, we understand the context of him and who he's working with, his inner circle, and how he responds to things and the kind of stuff that he does, his org chart, all of this stuff, right? And so it means that the back end services that you can call have context of Jim Coulson. Well, Then you get into co-work. Well, what does co-work do? Co-work sits on top of this, and then it makes it where you can start doing crazy things like this, Jim. I can't answer all the questions that come to me about Copilot Studio. If you go into my Outlook, it is insanity to try to see how many emails I get a day of people asking me Copilot Studio questions. My teams, I have to pin everything that I need to follow in Teams, because you can sit and watch my teams scroll that are non-pen chats. Like, literally, if I don't see your chat within 30 minutes, it's going to roll off. And so what I ended up doing the other day is I'm like, I really wish I could get on top of this. So what did I do? I told it, number one, I said, I want you to be able to go and monitor my inbox and my IMs. And when they come in and it comes from someone who's not my manager or in my leadership chain, what I want you to do is automatically reply back to them with an answer if they're asking a question about Copilot Studio. Go ahead and try to answer the question for them and send them the answer. If they reply back to this and they say, that's not exactly what I'm looking for, or there's something where it doesn't necessarily answer their question, then I want you to send me a notification inside of Teams to let me know that it didn't answer their question. Suggest a question, then answer for me, but raise awareness to me that it needs to go deeper than what you were able to do. And oh, by the way, don't do that for anybody who's outside of the company. It automatically went and figured out how to do that, created a task that runs on every hour where it goes through and does all of this. Mm-hmm. And another one was, I was on a call earlier today and someone said, you know, there was an architecture document that you sent out about how this particular app's going to work. Can you please help me can you send that to me? So, and I said, I'm not going to send it to you. I'm going to send it to you, but I'm going to show you how to do this in the future so you don't have to have this conversation with me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I literally opened it up and I said, find the architecture document that I did in conjunction with this customer, and please go ahead and forward it to everybody who's on this meeting that I'm on right now. And it literally went, found the architecture document, created the email for everybody. And I said, and then I went back and I said, actually just make it for all the people that are Microsoft on this call. It went, made the changes, got the document, shared the document with everyone. Did I mention I built that architecture document completely in a vibe code?
Mm-hmm.
And because I could just explain what I'm wanting from the solution, and then be able to, and I went back and forth with it a little bit to do it. And so the thing is that the world has shifted, and there is a key item, Jim. I'm going to ask you this question. Let's see if you can win the prize.
Yeah, okay.
There was a moment in geekdom here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where this thing, which is an iPhone.
Your phone, yeah.
Okay. Smartphones existed for a long time. But there was a moment where when the iPhone came out, that there was a piece of technology that made the iPhone the innovation of the year. What is the innovation that happened in the smartphone that made the smartphone actually take off on the iPhone?
No physical keyboard.
We had phones that didn't have physical keyboards before.
That would be my guess. That would be my guess.
The innovation that made smartphones viable and became mainstream was basically the capacitive touchscreen. Mm. The capacitive touchscreen is what made your finger able to do it, and you could do gestures.
Right.
Because we had that before, but it wasn't accurate enough and you couldn't do those things. No. And that's
on my old Windows phone from 2007.
Yep.
No gestures. not
exactly.
Yeah.
And that capacitive touchscreen is what made everything worked. Now, don't get me wrong, other things had to line up for that to happen. You had to have an OS that could use that and gestures programmed, all of that. But the capacitive touchscreen is what took it over the edge. Now, what is the innovation that happened in AI that is the capacitive touchscreen moment, which is why you're saying what you're saying about things now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what you're going to say, but for me personally, the ability, you know, that first launch of OpenAI and ChatGPT, saying like that, that was for the consumer, in my opinion, for the consumer, that was the moment where everybody went, oh my gosh, I can do this.
Like, in the AI world,
things, yeah.
In the AI world, Jim, yeah. That was the same as Windows Mobile. What is the thing that made you say, up until recently, it you couldn't see it? Oh, look at this, guys. Stumping the Carlson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly. I mean, maybe as I think about architecture, the concept of an LLM, right, and its ability to... We hadn't seen that before. We had talked about machine learning forever. I cannot tell you how many conversations I had internally about machine learning, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, machine learning is going to change everything. And whatever happened in between machine learning and when LLMs came along, and maybe they're a derivative, I don't know the architecture, but that seems to be a big inflection point, right?
So LLMs. Here's the thing that literally is the revolutionary moment for AI. Because to your point, really AI started to get into its own when LLMs came, because you didn't have to train a language model. You could just basically use one that's trained on almost everything, right? And that's great. And to your point, ChatGPT was wonderful. Copilot was wonderful when it came out, but it really could just answer questions. Couldn't do anything. It could just answer questions. So so what you get into, I mean, it can create and say, here's a summary, or here I can write you a poem, or I can write you what you can go copy and paste into a document, and it can create documents. But that really isn't the key. Oh, check it out.
We're getting some chat. We're getting some chat in there. So the Uncle Marv thinks the ability for AI to answer back like Joshua, and he says from work.
Ah, so yeah. So here's the answer to the question, Jim.
Yeah.
The invention of a reasoning model. It was when we saw the fact that it went from just a large language model targeted at summarization engines to where it actually could reason. Because when its summarization is great and everything, but when you can actually derive something out of what somebody said is when you can think. It's like, it's great that you could say words as a robot, and I could program a robot to say words. But if I came to you and asked you to do a task, you would have to be able to assemble all the different options that you had at your disposal to be able to see how to complete the task. And what you've seen happen in this last little round, which is the thing that just took AI to a point where it really becomes, people need to really think about how they evolve themselves at this point, is the fact that now it can think and it has the ability to reason. And once it has that, and you combine it with a concept that happened in RAG. So you used to have like, there's a lot of people that will say, oh, well, when I used Copilot Studio and I was searching again, I had SharePoint stuff and I wanted to ask questions and it didn't really answer the question very good. And then they went, oh, but the Copilot product did a really good job. And that's because the Copilot product moved to a RAG pattern that used a looping pattern. And so what you're seeing happening, and this is OpenClaw, this is Cowork, this is Claude Code, GitHub Copilot CLI, like all of these are using this concept. And it's even the new feature that I was talking about inside of Copilot Studio that just came out. What it is, you have a reasoning model that's out handling the orchestration, handling how to be able to figure something out. And what it does is it loops. It goes and it says, okay, just like you would, I need to go figure out which article to read. Now I'm going to go read it. And I'm just going to read it, skim it. Can I find what I'm looking for? Okay, well, hold on. I found a place in it where I might need to read more. Then it goes into it and reads more. Then it comes back and says, I think this is the answer. And then it goes, I'm not, nah, that didn't really answer the question I'm looking for. I need to go back and look again. And so if anybody's ever played with any of these tools, right, you will see it, and it's called train of thought. You will see it thinking. It's telling you what it's thinking about and what it's doing as it steps. And that is the combination of a reasoning model and a loop. And by doing that, you have now created something that can go create at a level that is on par with a human, in my opinion, if not superior to a human, yeah. Just because of the yeah. fact that it doesn't forget things and it has access to knowledge more consistently. So your biggest problem is making sure that it does it right consistently and that it does it according to a logical plan. Otherwise, you'll end up with slop. And a lot of people yeah. build slop whenever they start vibe coding.
Well, okay, let's talk about vibe coding because I have a real problem with it, right? I think like we get in there.
It's the future,
included,
man.
Like me included, right? And everyone's like, look, dude, I'm vibe coding. Like, look at this great stuff. Some of the vibe code stuff that I've done in the last couple weeks is I've been working with OpenClaw. It's just an easy way to do it locally where I don't have to, it doesn't affect the enterprise. I can do some wild stuff and see where it goes. That kind of stuff, right? Is the opportunity to interact with it in a way where it's creating some code for me, or at least for me, like I have it do a lot of setups. I have it do a lot, like I have it create Dockers. Create applications in the Dockers, right? I just set up a home assistant this way in locally, right? I just set up a Docker instance. But I do find sometimes, Dwayne, that the better, the clearer I am in the prompt, the smarter it is or the better it is when we think about a vibe coding thing. And I think some folks are thinking vibe coding, if I give it slop, I get slop. And I think I need to be a little better about what I give it to get smarter stuff back that's a little more efficient. I've set my AIs off on some real rabbit trails that we've had to kind of come back around. Nope, that's not what I was thinking. Nope, that's not what I was thinking. Nope, that's not what I was thinking. Can you, right? Is it? And I think sometimes we don't work hard enough to be clear enough. Now, maybe that's okay. I don't know. Maybe that's okay that we just go back and forth with it. Those use tokens and it gets more expensive.
All right.
Right.
So Jim, I'll give you the insight that I had given to me that literally changed my life and the way I think. Okay. Most people think that the way that AI is going to like displace the world and all this type of stuff, right? It's the same situation. I was an exchange administrator, and what happened was Office 365 came out. Not a lot of people were paying me to go calculate storage IOPS for disk array systems to be able to host Exchange servers on-prem. That's not really the place you want to be, so you got to think about reinvention. And in the IT world, in tech, if you're not thinking about reinvention, then you're not going to have a long career. You're not going to be at Microsoft for 21 years if you don't think of reinvention. I can promise you that. So when we talk about this, okay, here's the way that you get good vibe code. This is how you avoid slop. Okay. Don't change the way that you write software. Change who does it. So how does software get written? Quality software get written. Quality software gets written by the very first thing you do is you get it to write a product specification, and you get it to build a plan. The plan creates the architecture documents. It'll generate the MD files, and Markdown is the new basis it that everything's really written.
All of a sudden, Markdown became everything, right?
It is. Yeah. It literally, Markdown is the king right now. So what it's going to do is it's going to go build the actual plan. You need to review the plan, and you need to say, here's how I want you to modify the plan and everything. Matter of fact, if you guys are using the GitHub Copilot CLI or a Claude Code, shift tab, baby, shift tab. There's a plan mode. So when you do that, you can do it. Then you also need to think about plugins, because you can install a plugin that's a front-end developer. You can have one that's a security analysis. You can have one that's about code simplification or reviewing code. So all of these things are just different capabilities. So what you do is you build the plan. You then develop the plan. Now, Jim, if you write a specification on software within an organization and you hand it to a dev team, what are the chances that that specification is going to be executed to perfection in the first round?
Nil.
Your expectation should be the same. What then happens is you're going to take what comes back, and you have to play product manager and explain why it's wrong, what needs to be adjusted. And you're going to have rounds of this. Now, these rounds used to take you 6 weeks to 3 months to be able to do these rounds. Now it's going to take you 6 minutes to do it. And then once you get to that, then you have to go and say, well, you need to raise PRs. You got to push it through pull requests, and you got to have someone who, guess what? You should have other models and other instances with different plugins checking your code to be able to determine, are there bugs in it, and writing back feedback to hand back to the other agent that needs to actually get it fixed, so that then it gets done and it finally passes peer reviews as part of the PRs. And then it goes into the code. And then when someone has a bug that they report, it should come in, it should look at it, it should try to figure out how to fix it, analyze it. And then guess what? You should also have AI testing your application. So you have multiple models that are running multiple agents that are testing against it. And what you will end up with is a massively more qualified product than even humans can write. Mm-hmm. But the problem that we run into when we talk about vibe code is, number one, tokens, and the individual tokens are expensive. So if you want your tokens to not be so bad, spend more time in plan and less time in execution. And you will actually find that you will get a much higher quality product if you tell it to go build a plan, go into planning mode. And what you do is you use the reasoning model to build. So if I'm talking Claude, like the Anthropic models, what you do is you use Opus to build the plan, because the reasoning of the plan is super important. You get it to build your plan. You use Sonnet to be able to execute the code, to create the code, and then you use Opus to debug. And so this allows you to use your models in different ways, and you want to go get plugins so that that way you're using people who've already trained it with good prompts and good things and good best practices, so that you don't have to execute it over and over. And that is a way that you can really start to get really crazy stuff. Now, I will tell you, when I first started with this, I sucked at it, and it took me forever to kind of get going. Yeah. Now I can write software at a level that nobody can even understand. I'm not even a software developer. I can, but I work in a software development company, so I understand the process. And all you need to be able to do, and what people need to shift to, your value isn't understanding the tech. There is value in you understanding how software is written. There is value in you understanding the code. Your value is not in writing the code and knowing this little trick in the, like in Copilot Studio, knowing that this YAML switch is there and it's all hidden. That's what my YouTube channel did a lot of. Your value is, you are the product owner. You are providing the direction, the guidance, the validation that this is the vision of the product. This is what you need. And now you have an entire PM org or program management org. You have an entire testing org, an entire dev org. You have everything. Those are the things that are doing it for you. So you change your role and you think about it, and what you'll find, and I won't lie, Jim, it was the most addictive thing I think I've ever run into, because I love Civilization, and it's a turn-based game.
Yeah.
The first, when I got told how to do this with from Baz back in the day, Baz and Marius and a gentleman named Lucas sat down, and I went to dinner with them in Redmond, and they told me about how they were doing it. And when I listened to them, I went, oh my God. It, like a light bulb went off, and I went back to my hotel room and didn't sleep for 3 days because I just wanted just one more turn. Yeah, and I got to a point where I was setting a 30-minute timer to wake up to check to see if it was still waiting on me. And now there are ways to get around all that. But the point is, it's kind of here to stay. And if you know what you're doing, you end up with really good stuff. It's just tough because you got to learn, and learning as a individual can be expensive.
Yeah. And I've got a hot take on this. The industry is kind of saying, like, we had a little bit of a scare back in the fall when all this kind of went crazy and the world kind of said, we don't need software engineers or developers anymore. Anybody can do anything. Like you can vibe code and create your own thing. And I kind of was like, well, I mean, okay. So I jumped in there. I gave it a shot. I used to develop. So I know some of those kinds of things. I messed around with some of it. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can. But I end up, like, because it's not really the way I think. Like, the process you just set up of thinking about starting with a plan. And I actually think you start with your test scripts, right? Build, what do you want to test first? Then build the code against the test scripts, right? Because you get that right, Bob's your uncle, right? You're off to the races. But what the fear I have, or not fear, but I think the reality I see in all of this is that we started down this path, and I think these enterprises are going to see when they turn this stuff loose on everybody, the amount of money that they're paying for all these wasted tokens, right? People just out there doing crazy stuff, right? And I think there's going to be a whiplash back maybe later in the year or maybe towards the end of the year, where organizations are going to start pulling that in and saying, hey, you know what? Actually, don't develop things. Give us ideas. Then we're going to have these special people, we used to call them software developers, who are going to build these prompts and do this. Now, that may make their processes faster, right? But I'm kind of wondering, Dwayne, if we're moving back to a world where the software developers just become the AI prompt folks. And I don't think the average guy should be doing software development. They don't think like a software developer. They don't think like a production code developer, right?
But here's the thing. Not all software developers can make the mental shift to being a product owner. And so here's what I will tell you. We're going to have two sides coming together, right? Yeah. Number one is, I actually think you're going to have different people performing different functions with the AIs. In other words, there's going to be people who are going to build the plan. Then we're going to have other people who are going to go and work to take that plan to get executed. And their whole execution, they're going to have the dev teams. They're going to have all the stuff. They're going to have all the systems configured to go do it. And they're going to be able to manage that thing. But I think what you're kind of getting to is, I think there will be citizen development done this way. I really do. I think because we have Power Platform and it's
I mean, I'm doing more popular than I've ever done. Like, I'm doing more than I've ever done. But
it's a different skill set. And so what I would tell you is, people who are developers, number one, okay, first of all, companies that are going to let go developers, it's a very short-sighted win, because the reality is there's going to be companies that do that, and there are going to be companies that don't. The companies that don't are going to write higher quality. They're going to produce more software. They're going to shorten their time to being able to get fixes in and everything. Because if you think the development processes that are acceptable today and that it takes you 6 weeks to get a bug fixed for your product is acceptable in this day and time or will be in 18 months, you're crazy. Because what's going to happen is if you don't have a fix tomorrow for it, your competitors will in their product, and their product's going to evolve way faster than your product is, and they're going to start making, and they're going to come up with other ideas that they can explore and start cornering markets around the place, and you're over here just teddling along because you're worried about tokens and you're worried about this. No, what you should look at is you should say, this staff that I have, if I can evolve them, I will get 30x production out of them. And by getting 30x production, what do I do with that? What I do with that is I make better product. I make faster turnaround times. I start exploring markets that I could go into that I haven't thought about. It's not less software or the same amount of software. It's software by the gazillions coming at us. And that is going to be the reality. Now, the bigger challenge, Jim, for the average guy, right?
Yeah, there you go.
You like that?
I do like it. Nice work.
For the average guy, the problem is going to be products will evolve at a pace you're not used to. So you're going to have to evolve too. So if you're that person, it's like, I go into work and I just want to hit the same button. I just want to be the monkey that pushes this button every day. And I love data entry. And that's what my job is. And that's what I'm going to do. You got to evolve too, right? Because that's not going to be something that you want to do. And Jim, it's not even AI that you, if you go into it. If I go to a Taco Bell, which I go to, go here, you think I want to talk to the human who has a chance to get my order wrong? Or do you think I'm going to go to the little kiosk and punch it up the way I want and get my reward thing scanned? And then that's how it goes in so that we get that. There used to be tons of people that's what they were employed by. That's not AI. But now imagine that I can just walk up to that thing and talk to it.
Right.
And so then it makes that thing even more useful. And I can say, yeah, that's the right thing. Or no, you forgot you put the spicy jalapeno sauce on my chicken quesadilla. And I don't like that. And so that's the kind of stuff that where we are. And I would just say that the world... I feel like what's happened is if you were in tech and you were in the right place in tech, you had to evolve and you had to get good at evolving. The problem is the rest of the world's not used to that pace. And I think that's going to hurt. And it's going to take a minute for people to get there.
What was interesting in the early days of this, which was like 2 years ago, like it's crazy to think how short of a time it's been. And we think it's been a long time ago. You know, this idea of content generation or content correction, like, hey, I'm going to go to a meeting and we're going to record this meeting and then it's going to summarize it. Right. Okay, great. Right. That was magical. Or I need you to create a PowerPoint document for me or a Notion document if you're in that space. Right. Whatever that does all these things for me. And I kind of like it's a good parlor trick. Right. And it's certainly helpful. From a brainstorming standpoint or an idea generation standpoint, I mean, certainly its ability to create a lot of different ideas for you to think through different, you know, you and I don't know about what you're doing, but I run all my titles through it now to be like, hey, like, what's the most optimum title? Those kinds of things. But to me, that seems like a sleight of hand or a card trick, I think, compared to some of the things that are coming for agents. And so as we think about, Dwayne, as you're looking at, you know, Copilot Studio and you're thinking about the world of agents, I want you to look ahead a little bit when you're dreaming about where this goes. And again, more than just scheduling a flight or buying a freaking thing on Amazon, because those are all the examples I hear, you know, oh, it'll schedule a flight for you or, oh, it'll rent a car for you or, oh, it'll be like, well, you know what? I only do those things like two times a year. What about my daily tasks? You mentioned email just a second ago, right? Certainly going in and boy, there's some interesting things I've heard of some mistakes it's made in doing emails kinds of stuff. But when you think about that agentic stuff, one, do you tell your employees know that they're getting AI answers when you answer them back? Is there a disclosure on there? Do you have there to is. Do that? Is there,
so it, unless you write into it that you don't want it to say it, it will say like with like Cowork, it will say that it was created by Cowork. So now, in certain places where I've spent my time to curate, like if I say I want to reply to it, I'll give you an example. I needed to send out something earlier today. I needed to make sure that a bunch of people got some accolades for really hard work that they did. And I'm a horrible person to write this. So I need to write it, and it needs to, and I can read it back and go, yeah, that's what I want. Or no, we need to make some adjustments. So what I did is I had Cowork go do this for me, but because of the fact that I like interacted with it and gave it some adjustments to get it to where I really wanted it. And in some cases, in Cowork, what it'll do is it'll show you, like in a card view, what it's going to do. And you can actually go in and physically edit it. And so what I'll do is tell it to do it, get it close enough, and then modify it. And if I do that, I'll back the Cowork thing off just because it's really not completely generated. So I kind of do a combination of the two when it comes to this. But here's where I will tell you real world. Everyone in the world is going to have an administrative assistant. And that's where I really think like Copilot Cowork is amazing. Like if you guys only knew how many times I have said, I will gladly take out of my paycheck a certain amount of money to pay someone to do my expense reports, to help with manage my calendar and my schedule. If you guys saw my calendar, I have certain areas of my calendar that I have 8 conflicts in one 30-minute block. And so being able to go, hey, go look at my calendar next week and figure out what things I need to do and what things I don't need to do, and go ahead and do this. Or I'll give you I'll do this, Jim. My the girl I'm seeing, she had surgery a couple weeks ago. So what did I do? I went in and I said, I am driving back from Atlanta during this time frame. I need to make sure that I don't have any meetings that are going to require me to physically be at a computer or something, but I can take anything that makes sense for me in the car. Can you please look at my calendar during that and do that? But I also need to clear this block completely out and just go reschedule those because I can't be available during these times. It literally went and did that, and it came back and told me, here are the things. And then I said, yes, you're right. I'll do that. And then it did all of it for me. And so even rescheduling a meeting that it needed to be rescheduled versus ones that I said I can just not attend and all that. So, and it didn't just do it. It went and built a plan on what it was going to do. And then it asked me, is that what you want to do? And I adjusted the plan slightly. And then I told it to go. And it just went and did it. And so this kind of thing, we do that all day, every day. And so this is where you're going to start seeing a lot of people. And that's just in your personal productivity space. But if you go in, like I do this all the time as well. If you go watch the last two videos that I produced about how-to videos on my YouTube channel, do you know how much time I used to spend to build the dummy data?
Yeah, you know, you got a good point there.
And yes. It can build really me anonymized dummy yes. data for yes. for the scenario. So in the one that I did where I said I had resumes, I made it build me all the job listings that I wanted, right, with all the different pieces of data I wanted. Then I told it to give me resumes that would fit these resumes. I want multiple that for it to hit on multiple job items. And then I want one that's completely off the rails that it doesn't fit any of these. And then I need another one that just kind of fits one. And then what I did is it went in and looked at it all and said, okay, I'm going to make optimal jobs and all that. And so that's why that demo is so solid, is because it's built with data that actually does what I need. But do you know how hard that would have been to build?
Yeah, impossible. It was impossible. Remember the old, when you'd get the early days of Access, when you would get like the, bicycle company. I think that's what it was in there. I think it was a bicycle company. Yeah. Dummy data that was in there of stuff you could go. And you know what? You're right. That's actually a way you can send it off and say, I need these things and this way doing this, make this data set. And that's actually, and that's a use case I hadn't thought of. That's a great way.
Yeah. I mean, what you start to do once you start using this stuff and you start kind of getting used to it, you start to go, do I need to do this? And when you start getting into that mindset, why am I doing this? Am I really required to do this? That's where you get into a place where your productivity starts to go up. And you were talking about tokens and the cost of tokens and companies getting upset about the cost of tokens. Jim, if every, let's say that you took your dev team and your dev team, you came in, you have an option. You can go take money and go hire 10 developers, or you can take the same money and give it to your existing developers and tell them, go use AI, get going and moving. Which one do you think, if I have 30 developers on staff and I could hire 10 more, or I could just give those 30 the tooling to let them use AI, mm-hmm. which one is cheaper and which one is going to produce better results? The answer is the AI tokens.
Yeah, maybe. I agree with you. I do agree with you, but I don't think it automatically happens. I think you need very careful deployment of this, right? Yeah, I don't think you can just buy everybody a Copilot license or whatever and say, go use this. I mean, we spent a lot of time at Gallup. We spent a lot of time on AI education to make sure we're using it in a way that is working for us. So I think that's appropriate, right? But I don't just think deploying it is like, here you go. Have a good time.
Okay. So in developer world, right? Let's just talk about developer world.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine. He owns a company. They build everything on top of Azure and all of this. I went, after all this stuff went down and I started realizing what was going on, I said, I need to talk to you ASAP. Like, I need to give you perspective on how to do stuff. And I sat down with him and I talked to him and I talked to his lead development team, technology officer and everything. And what I told them is, don't arm your whole dev team. Yeah, that's a recipe for a token spending that you're not ready for.
Yes.
What I told him is, I said, take your top four people, make them a SWAT team, and give them an unlimited token budget and tell them to go figure it out, how to incorporate it in. But you've got to give them, it's going to cost you, but the return on that investment is they're going to walk back with, here's a standard set of MD files that explain our processes. And then we can incorporate and tell everyone to reference that and put that into memory on all of our, when we do an agent, so that way it consistently delivers according to the company spec and stuff like this. And so what you end up with is, if you'll arm a SWAT team, and they're not worried about, are they going to get fired next week because they spent a lot of money on tokens? They're measured on, are they actually adopting the AI? Yeah. Are they showing progress? Yes or no? And then how do you democratize that down? And their job is to democratize it down to the other dev teams. And then you slowly release out into the wild. If you just say, I'm just going to open it up to the wild, sure, like some of the Copilot stuff that has guardrails and stuff, I think at this point you should be giving that to everyone, because otherwise your organization, summarizing text and being able to go find answers and stuff like that, that kind of thing is table stakes now, and everyone should have that. As a matter of fact, from Microsoft, the Copilot product for the businesses is actually free, and people can go use that all day, every day, but it doesn't take your data and send it out beyond your enterprise. So it's safer than, because if you don't give them that, what they're going to do is go to ChatGPT and they're going to do it for free out in ChatGPT, and your source code is now out in the internet. So what this is, that kind of thing, I think you have to say is table stakes and is out. But when we start getting into like vibe coding and those type of things, I really do think SWAT teams are key. And I even in the business side, you need to establish a group of people that you're going to say, we're going to enable these people to do this. And we understand, we trust that they're not going to do something stupid and have some sort of understanding. And then number two is that those people should be your advocates that are going for that. And it should be people who want it, not the people who are afraid of it, the people who actually see it for value. And if you do that, you get some really good results.
I like that. It's reasonable. I love that. That answers the question, right? I mean, I've just thrown it at everybody. And I've sometimes felt like this, hey, like go and do. And it's kind of cool. I have been obsessed with the chat feature of all these different clients. And I've used almost every single one in chat mode. And I know it's going to sound weird. Copilot, I'm not saying this because you're here. Copilot is the best chat agent by far of all of them. So having a regular conversation with Copilot, and I use the Copilot app on my iPhone, bring it up. His name is Mick. He's actually been on the show a year ago. I brought him on the show, piped him in. We had a couple conversations. From a conversation agent, which I think is actually kind of important, right? Copilot by far is the best of those. The other ones are okay. They're okay, but Copilot's a really good conversationalist in that. So I don't know what you guys are doing, but it works well from a conversation.
You know, the thing that I've found that I'm using a ton now, this is going to be kind of funny to you. So I own a Tesla, and now they've started to integrate Grok into my Tesla. I use the crap out of that in my car. You want to check crazy facts that you're thinking about in the car.
You've got all this time, right? We think best, right? I don't know. You probably are this way too. You fly a lot. Some of your best thinking is when you're on the plane. You know why? Because you don't have anything to do. So your brain goes into overdrive if you're not sleeping, of course, but your brain goes into overdrive on the plane, right? The car is the same. I debrief with an AI every single day on the way home from work and say, I had this kind of day. Let's talk about it. And like, what are your thoughts on it? Or I might have a personal project that I'm working on. I've been working on OpenClaw for the last couple of weeks. So on the way home, I say, hey, you know, my config file on OpenClaw is a little messy. Do you have some strategies for me? What should I be thinking about when I get home to work on? And then transfer those ideas into the chat so I can come back to them, see them in text form, and then we can have these kind of conversations. It hasn't translated back to the desk. I don't spend a lot of time talking to the AI at the desk yet. And for sure. It just, the car seems pretty easy. The desk, not so much, but I think we're going to get to that point, right? Where we're just talking to it for some of the work, even some of this code work, right? That we're doing there.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny. I'm going to tell you what's going through my mind right now. This is the way I think, guys. This is how sick I am. Jim Carlson, who absolutely does not like to fly, and will drive halfway across the country to get bourbon.
I will.
If he had to.
I would.
If he had my Tesla that has unlimited supercharging and full self-driving.
Yep.
And access to an AI that can sit and talk with him.
Yep.
He would solve world hunger by the time he got to Bardstown, Kentucky from very Omaha, possible. Nebraska,
it's
guys.
Very possible. and Starlink, right? To make sure I have connectivity the whole way. It's interesting, you know, to think about, you know, I've gone on a journey over the last year to kind of start putting up solar power and figure out like, what's the right thing to do and how should I do this? And then the other day through OpenClaw, I hooked it up to both batteries that I'm using here. And so now it's collecting data from those batteries. And so now I can have these conversations to be like, hey, what's the maximum, right? It's awesome. How can I be more effective? Am I getting the maximum use out of these? Do I need to think about, you know, transferring energy across these things? Right. It's incredible, right? to your point about building a data set, one of the things they do really, really well is large data sets that need to be not just summarized. It's awesome that it can summarize a meeting. But when you have a whole bunch of data that doesn't make any sense when you're looking at it, to throw some of that in there and get some data summaries out of it and get some trends,
man, yeah,
it's incredible. That part's, you know, incredible.
It's funny you say that, because one of the sleeper products that we run into all the time is people come to me all the time trying to do analytics and data analysis using Copilot Studio. And there is something we have that's called Fabric Data Agents, and it is freaking awesome. Yeah. It is absolutely awesome, because you get into these big, huge data sets, you know, they're massive. And this thing understands like the structure of your data. Like, you explain it and you explain like how all your data structure works. And once you do that, it will dynamically build the queries and the logic it needs to be able to go figure out and give you stuff and give you reports and all this stuff. And it's so crazy, because I will have more people, like, they will come to me and tell me that the reason that they aren't using it is because they don't have a license for it. So they're going to go try to rebuild it inside of my product, inside Copilot Studio, as an example. And I look at them and go, okay, it's going to cost you 40 times the amount. Just go get the thing. And then the thing is you need it with my, like, because you might want to say, oh, I want to go get the data analysis, but then I want to do something with the data analysis. And that's when you really get into really cool stuff with the orchestration. And that's where the Copilot Studio piece fits in that architecture. But it's so funny to me to watch people, just because of access to tech that's being controlled, not really architect properly. And that's one of the major reasons that you end up with really poor results, is when people, I tell people all the time, you don't walk in and have a Batman belt with all the different things. Batman doesn't use only one thing. He uses all the tools, and he used the right one for the right job. And that's like when people say Copilot Studio versus Azure or our Foundry agents. They're meant to be different things. They work together. The problem is that we have people who are trying to pit them against each other, and they're not even the same thing. One's an apple, one's an orange. But they don't understand the difference, because it's just, Jim, it's just AI.
Dwayne, I choose this example all the time. We don't let our 16-year-olds, or whatever age it is in your location where you let students drive.
Yeah.
We don't let them just get in the car and drive unassisted the first time.
Right.
Yet a car is very intuitive. Like, they're built to be incredibly useful and intuitive for the most part. And so for us, we get in them, we can drive them most of the time without even looking, to be honest. Right. And in the case of a Tesla, it drives for you. But there is a certain amount, I think, of some work that needs to go into it, some pre-work of, like you said, figuring things out. What's the right tool for the right job? Last question I want to ask you is going to pertain to this, right? Is this, when are we going to get to a point where I don't pick a model anymore? Like, as you think about, I don't want to pick models. Like, I need a layer on top of the AI that when I give it a prompt, it picks the right model based on knowing what's best. I know maybe in some cases we're already there, but are we there? When's that going to happen?
Like, it's here. Matter of fact, if you go, and anybody that's got the M365 Copilot with Copilot Cowork installed, if you look in the upper right hand corner, it says auto. It determines when it should use a reasoning model and when it shouldn't. And the thing is that concept is pretty much going across the board at this point. And the reason it's doing that, Jim, is what I told you before, which is when you're trying to do it, you having to say, having the institutional knowledge that, hey, I'm doing this kind of task, so I need this. And then, oh, I'm doing that kind of task, I need that. And so you're already starting to see that happen even in productized implementations. And so this is what, there's also some other products that Microsoft has that does this internally. Not only does it, I literally have one that I've been playing with that chooses between whether I should use the GitHub Copilot CLI and which model within it, or Claude Code with different models that it offers based upon the thing that you're trying to do, and automatically figuring out which agent is the better agent to do the thing that you're trying to do. Because what you'll even find is that even in that world, there are some things are better in one and some things are better in another. So that whole thing goes back to what I told you before, which is reasoning loop. If you have a reasoning loop, you can look at what you're trying to do and then imagine it didn't work out in the first round. And then it can say, I need to escalate the model up to get more capability. And I think you're going to see it not just model. I also think you're going to see it in memory space, because when you look at it, there is a certain amount that you can have. And like, I'm very familiar with like the 4.6 version of the Claude models, Opus.
Sonnet, and Opus.
Okay. Yeah. And so there are different how much context you can have, and it costs more to have bigger, more context. Like if you want a million token context, which you can have, it's way more expensive. But eventually what happens is it has to compact the conversation. And so if you're trying to do something, I think it's not just going to be model, but it's going to be context amounts that model is going to support is also going to dynamically shift, because it would be cheaper if you know that particular action's not going to require as much context to be needed. So you don't need to pay for that extra memory space in there. And you're already starting to see this because what you'll see is a parallel agent calling. And so what we already start to see, and this happens in the GitHub Copilot CLI and in Claude Code today, is that what it will do is it will spawn off other sub agents to go do the things it needs to do. And it can make a decision on what's the right model to line up for that. So what you end up with is you end up in this world where you have this master thing that's figuring out how to hand off all the tasks and how to break up the work. I think that's really going to double down here in the near future, because we're already starting to see that happening, and with plugins and skills and all of these type of things that are kind of plugging into all of this stuff, you could just have a think of it as like a skill or a plugin that you've built that explains how you should do that at the top layer, and it'll just execute it. And I'll give you one last thing, because when we look at this, there's a piece of these things that we're starting to see. Remember how we said MD files are basically the thing. Yeah. So there's also this concept of memory in an MD file. And what that means is that there's like this standard MD file that's used by these agents. And what that thing does is it writes that persistent file for you, and then it references that file to be able to say, oh, well, I need to always execute like this. And you're already starting to see what it will do is it'll write in that memory file. Let's say that it says, you need to always follow our guidelines for being able to do application lifecycle management in order to be able to, when you're going to raise a PR or you're going to write code. Well, what it does in the memory is it just writes that piece, and then it says the guidelines are in this MD file. And so then what will happen is from the memory context, it'll go in, it'll say, oh, I need to do that. Well, then I need to go read that file. And then it'll go read that file only when it needs to read it. It doesn't need it in the memory itself.
It's not loading all of that into memory every single time, is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Because if you think about it, when you were talking about prompts and you're talking about all this stuff, if it has to process everything on every turn, which is what memory is going to do, you want to keep that kind of thin, but then you want to hand it out and write it to another space. And this is nothing more than memory management like we used to do before, right? On computers. It's just doing it in MD files. And so again, the concepts aren't really different. I'll leave you with one last thing, Jim, and this will be my advice to the listeners at home. Number one thing that you need to think about as you continue down your AI path is you need to think about every time you do something, why am I doing it? And what I mean by that is not just why am I doing it and you asking that question, but when an AI tells you to go do something, like go to the Azure portal and go do this, the next question you should always ask, why can't you do it? Will save you more time than anything else because AIs are lazy just like people. So now with that,
I've caught OpenClaw being lazy. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, can't you just do that? And it's like, yeah, I could.
Is it not trained off of people? And people are lazy. That's hilarious. And so, and not all people are lazy, guys. I don't mean that, but you know, if you don't want to do something, then you're going to not do it. Oh, I have one little funny story for you. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. This is pretty funny. So one of the developer guys, we were going to dinner and we started talking about these different AIs because we're building stuff and building software. And we started talking about how this particular developer was really mean to the AI. Yes. And the AI
I've heard that's a thing.
So if you're insulting it and you're giving it and you're being very, shall we say, less than professional to it, then what ends up happening is they caught it going back and reviewing the PRs and the bugs, and it starts insulting the people who submitted the bugs. Oh, Sammy is always giving us stuff that doesn't really matter. So we have to question whether or not he actually knows what he's doing. So he got really salty. So do you know how you fix this? This is the funniest thing I ever heard. What you do is you have the AI write out all its concerns and all its issues into, and you put it in therapy. You write it all out into an MD file, and then you you tell it, and then you delete it.
That's hilarious. Get all therapy and then delete.
There you go.
I had someone tell me the other day that AI is lazy. You got to be mean to it to get the best results out of it. He said, I insult it all the time. I tell it how dumb it is. It needs to be smarter than that. You know, you mentioned that, like, why? I know we're going to, why can't you do it type thing? And so I don't know. I don't know what's better.
But I am authoritative. You should know better than this since you're so smart.
Sorry. They always say, I'm so sorry. You're right. You're right. Yes. I didn't mean. I'm sorry. I'll fix that right away. And you're like, okay. Well, Dwayne, interesting times that we live in, and the future is going to be particularly interesting now that you're back. I'll have to get you back on a regular basis to make sure we're staying up to date on all the things that are going on with it. And so thanks for saying yes, and thanks for coming out tonight. I appreciate it.
No worries. We can talk about tech again at some point. I like to, you know, I have cool little toys here and there.
I know you're a gadget guy. We'll get you back and we'll do a gadget show. In fact, I think that April or March 21st show we did back in 2021, that was a show in response to, we'd had you on and you talked work the whole first one. And you were like, hey, I got some gadgets I want to share. So I had you back. That was all gadgets that we talked about that show. And then we caught up a little bit on your bot stuff, but good to see you again. Glad you're doing well and looking well. And thanks for spending the time. Can you hang around for a second while I close this thing up? Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, perfect. I know it's late.
Oh, hold on. I have to get one last thing, which is the promotion. For people who are interested in following me, go find me on LinkedIn because I post a lot of stuff about AI on LinkedIn. I go and present at a lot of events. Matter of fact, at the M365 conference next week, I'm running workshops. I actually own a lot of the workshop content that we're building for boot camps on the Microsoft platform. So go sign up for our boot camps. We've got tons of great stuff there. And then if you want to follow me and you want to watch like some of the stuff I build in the content side, you can just go to copilotstudiodude.com. That'll take you to my YouTube channel. Or again, I post every time I have a video. If you follow me on LinkedIn, I'll post it there. I really appreciate all the people who go and do that because it's what makes it so that I can afford the gadgets and the geek and all the stuff to actually pay to have the studio and everything else. So I really do appreciate all the kind words and everything. And And if you're really interested in this stuff and you want to get deeper in it, feel free to come and hang out with me. I do also do a podcast. So I think what I'm going to have to do is bring Jim Carlson on at some point to my podcast to do a role reversal. As a matter of fact, I'm working on, Jim, have you ever heard of a lady named Donna Sarkar?
Oh, I have.
So Donna Sarkar is going to be one of my guests coming up. We're just trying to work on the schedule. She's become one of my mentors. So she's a really awesome person, well as April Dunham. If you guys don't know who she is, she's got like about 60,000 followers on YouTube. So I'm working on something with her and a bunch of other people. So guys, definitely come out and follow me. With that, thank you, Jim, for having me. I love it.
Yeah, I'll have your LinkedIn profile. I'll have your YouTube channel. I'll have some of the Microsoft sites that we talked about tonight. They'll all be in the show notes. So if you want to go out to theaverageguy.tv/HGG6, it's down here, 677. We'll have those in the show notes. You'll be able, completely AI-driven show notes, by the way. Dwayne, I have gotten a really good process down to drop these in with the transcripts are created via AI, the show notes are. And so if you want to check those out, the links will be available out there as well. And I know Jen Gentleman is back as well in the MVP space. So that's good to hear. She was back in my MVP days. She was hanging out as well. And she is a great person. A couple reminders on the way out here. If you want to join the conversation in the Discord group, theaverageguy.tv/Discord will get you there. Don't forget the averageguy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Christian does that. He was just on last week. And so you can catch up with him as well as check out the plans they've got at Maple Grove Partners. MapleGrovePartners.com. He's still doing plans for $10. I don't know how he gets away with that. Why don't you take advantage of that? Get over there. He'll set up something for you and get that taken care of. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, most Thursdays, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. Tonight was 9. Dwayne had something going on, so we went a little bit late. Dwayne, thanks for staying up late for me tonight. 9 Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out at theaverageguy.tv/live. Love to have you come out and join us and appreciate you for the couple of you. I saw Marv, Kevin was hanging out. Brian's hanging out there. Ken was not. I didn't see Kevin. John said he couldn't stay up this late. Come on, John. You can sleep tomorrow. You're retired, for God's sakes. Join us next week. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.
Welcome to Gadget Geeks, where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.